The greater and richer the vision of a system of understanding, it is reason's own self-comprehension of absolute mind. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capo, California, with the thought for today, the absolute illumination, and now we have the absolute philosopher. So, the absolute philosopher has taken up a mouthful here. The greater the vision, the greater and richer the vision of a system of understanding is reason's own self-comprehension of absolute mind. We have several students who are geniuses. In fact, all of our students are geniuses. But we have several students who think that they have to convolute words in such a complex way that it makes it all more more enduring, more exciting. And so when you're sitting in a conversation with them, they will talk in such complex terms, and even on the telephone for 2 seconds, they talk in such complex terms that you stand there and say, what happened, you know? And then when you think about it afterwards, you realize that they didn't say anything. They said absolutely nothing at all. And the reason that they said absolutely nothing at all was that they were looking at words as playthings. And looking at words as playthings, they made them, they took these gigantic words, these gigantic phrases, and made them appear as though they were intelligible. But this is how a lot of writers are, and a lot of speakers are, and a lot of thinkers are. And St. Thomas Aquinas and St. Augustine are two of the greatest thinkers of the world. And what they have written about was so profound and so remarkable in many ways that if you could read them and understand them, you would understand what heaven and hell and what all of the great things the saints do and are. You'd understand all of the teachings of God and all the teachings of Jesus Christ. You'd understand everything. However, their books were accepted by the Roman Catholic Church as gospel, and because they were accepted, nobody reads them. The books are really quite amazing, quite good, but nobody reads them. And the reason nobody reads them is one simple little activity. Everybody wants to write their own book. And that's a very beautiful thing. But everybody wants to write their own book. I worked at the Science of Mind magazine for several years. And most of my work was transcribing Ernest Holmes' tapes and transcribing other things and preparing the monthly magazine along with Gertie Dooley to go out every month and so forth like that. And it was a very busy time. Well, Ernest Holmes said things so beautifully and so simply that they were very easy to read and to follow. But in my eagerness and my youth and so forth, I thought, surely I can write just as well as he did. And so I began writing things on the topics that he wrote, and they were very good. And then later I showed it to my son, and he says, that sounds like Ernest Holmes. And I thought to myself, I really wasn't being myself. I was being a clone of Ernest Holmes. I was copying his style, his way of doing things, his way of thinking. And I thought, my goodness, this is really not very beneficial for me. And then I began looking at the Catholic religion. And I came to the realization that the Catholic religion was not going too far, because all they did was to copy the early writers and to copy what someone else did. And the New Thought religions were coming along a little better. They were at least thinking for themselves until they developed a saint in each New Thought community. And Ernest Holmes was a saint. Charles Fillmore and Myrtle Fillmore were saints in Unity. These were all people that they worshipped. Well, now, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore were no great writers. They took the Emily Cady books, Lessons in Truth, and used it as their foundation and built their organization around it. Wonderfully so, wonderfully so. But very simple and very beautiful. But the moment anything becomes a worship object, then it becomes not representative of absolute thought. Absolute thought is not bound by any schematic, is not bound by the greater and richer the vision of a system of understanding, which many people think it is. It is so profound, it just boggles the mind in its profundity. Well, if it is so profound, and if it boggles the mind, then it's not absolute. Absolute is so simple, it is so refined and defined that it would not confuse anybody. But what confuses people about absolute is that the concepts that it proposes are beyond their ability to approve of. Now, in absolute, it says all is. In absolute, it says nothing is created nor destroyed. In absolute, it says that whatever our thought is, that is what is manifest. Now, that sounds like the human and the relative to me. Well, we have had a tendency to take and put our great ideas in the relative and place them in the relative and think of them in the relative and then lose them in the absolute. So, what would be an absolute concept? Let's just say an absolute concept is I am God. That's a big absolute concept. But we say that's a relative thought. Well, if you think of it as a relative thought, it is. But think, if you were in the religions 30, 50 years ago, 100, 200 years ago, and you said, I am God, what would people think of you? They would think that you're ready for the booby hatch. And they'd be right, too. Because the attitude that people had of God in those days was what? God was up on cloud nine, guiding your thinking and your life, and judging you, and making things go. Now, what do we think of God today? God is any word. God is principle. God is principle. If God, and God always was principle, and in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, in ancient writings, in the fundamental religions, and other religions, they all taught God is principle. But they didn't want to take it to the ultimate of what it means to say that God is principle. When you say God is principle, number one, you cannot worship God. If God is principle, you cannot put him out on cloud nine to judge us. Because principle doesn't really care. Principle acts upon what? That's right. Cause and effect. Principle acts upon its reality. Now, how do you ever learn anything? You don't learn anything. You merely reveal what you already know. That's principle. Principle is that within you or within everything is all knowledge. I know that I know that I know, is in all awareness. And we want to say that we must learn it. We must make our minds remember it. We must make ourselves come to terms with it. And you see, in doing that, we push absolute concepts further and further away from us because we say it is something separate from us. And it took a long time to bring God into our hearts. It took a long time to bring God into our hearts. It took a long time to bring God into our hearts. Because Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is where? When did he say that?
Always.
2,000 years ago, right? Now, why is it we're so Johnny-come-lately in being aware of it? Why is it that we're only now admitting that the kingdom of God is within? And if the kingdom of God is within, everything that goes along with that has to be consistent too. So, you see, we make absolute so profound, so complex, so convoluted, which turning around statements and turning around statements and turning around statements until we get confused. Whereas if we would just say, I am God, I am all, I am is, I am all knowledge, and I like me, and I am whole and perfect. I choose to create this body I'm living in as a whole and perfect body. And Ellen met with a man today, and she says, you know, he's a perfect example of a magnificent human being. He worries about nothing, concerns about nothing, has a good attitude about himself, about life, and about everything. And yet, if I were to give you the laundry list of his problems, you'd say, my God, how could he have such a good attitude with that laundry list of problems? Because of what, Ellen?
His attitude.
No, because he doesn't have the list. He doesn't have the list. You have the list.
He doesn't know a list.
He doesn't know the list. He only knows that he's whole and perfect. He only knows that he is a desirable person. He only knows that he is a cavalier, you know.
Cavalier,
that's another one too. But he only knows that about himself. Now, can we begin to know that about ourselves? When we do, then we're on the road to being aware of being absolute. We're on the road to being aware that all is absolute. And then all of the convolution, all of the confusion fades away, and we know what it is. Now, reason likes to have something to give it a right to live. Now, what is the statement we have in our textbook?
There's no reason and no logic in the spiritual.
In spiritual thinking, there is no reason and no logic. And reason wants to have a reason be there, so it makes a complex concept of God. It makes a concept, complex concept of how principle works. Everything gets real complex. Now, I was talking with someone the other day about some complex things. And, we were talking about front page that we were working on the computer to work on the web page. And I had talked with several people there, and they said, oh, this is so complex, this is so complex, this is so complex. And as I recalled, it wasn't complex, but I thought it was complex, so I didn't fool with it. But the day we went in to talk with one young man, he told us, this is, and this is, and this is. He did not mention one complexity, not one of the codes that have to be used, none of the things. He just says, do this, do this, do this, and you're in business. And then type in anything you want, but be sure that you save it. If you don't save it, you won't have it. Now, that's complex. That's complex. At least that's what it was attempted to make. Now, why do you think that we were discouraged from doing anything on it before?
Because they said it was complex.
No, we were discouraged from doing anything on it before because they wanted to do the work. And if we did it ourselves, they wouldn't have to do the work. Now, I'm not saying they did something wrong. I'm just saying they were a good salesman, telling us that we couldn't do it ourselves. Now, I worked here on this computer, putting the stuff onto the encoding system, and there was things happened. It wouldn't work. It wouldn't work, and I was wrong. I was wrong. I was stupid. I was the one who was making the errors, and then we find out that the errors were made somewhere else. That the errors were made at headquarters. The errors were made on the line, on the web itself, and when it was straightened out, everything we were doing was correct. Because I had everything definitely written down, and I followed it to the T. So, you see, business, life, the world attempts to make things complex for us so that we won't do it ourselves and let other people do it. Now, what is happening in the United States and much of the world is that 35% of the children, I think that's what the term was, are being taught at home by their parents. Now, do their parents know how to teach their children? No. They haven't had any schooling in being a teacher. Do their parents know how to understand the subjects they're teaching? No, no better than the kid does. And are the parents willing to work with the kid and teach them these things and teach them values and teach them spiritual values too? Yep. The children who have come off from the home training are superior to the children who are coming out of the school. And because they're superior to the children who are coming out of the school, thought is being given to the technique of teaching children at home. And that's a very important thing for us to consider. Why do the children learn better at home? What is it that's going through their mind that allows them to learn better at home? Well, number one, their mother loves them. And she cares about their learning curve. And if they don't understand, she'll say, "You stupid kid, you know, look at the rest of the kids in the class. They understand, but you don't understand, you know." And that puts you down. Puts you right straight down to the bottom, so you have no desire to learn. But the mother says, "Well, let's look at it differently. Let's look at it differently." Like the boy who was teaching the underprivileged children, he's very, very brilliant. And so he had to get geometry across to the student. And so he saw the kid loved basketball. So he went on the court with him. And he said, "Okay, now you stand there, I'll stand here, and the basket's there. What sort of triangle do we have? Triangle? Oh, yeah, okay. Now, you move over here, you do this. Now, what sort of triangle do we have?" And before you know it, the kid knew all the triangles because he knew them in relation to something that pleased him.
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't stupid. He just wasn't motivated. And I'm sure that by the time this kid got done working with him, that he had a different outlook toward learning, a different outlook toward his ability to learn. And he found out it wasn't so complex after all. So I suggest to each of us, join the Absolute Philosopher and speak your word for whatever it is you want to speak it. Be as wild in your imagination as you can. I've been teaching that for years now. Be as wild in your imagination, and you know, you'll probably be right. Not only probably, you'll be right. Just let your mind travel into the strangest realms that you can, and you'll be living inside of your consciousness, living in the realm that you had never touched before. You'll be living in absolute consciousness, and you'll be experiencing some pretty wonderful things. So think on these things. They are lots of fun, and they're exciting, and they're rewarding, and they're uplifting, and they're lots of fun, just lots of fun. So, to heck with our title, The Absolute Mind is fantastic. Enjoy it by letting it all out and having a ball. I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.